Welcome to the weekend. Each week, I invite a keynote Sandler trainer to discuss the strategies that will improve behavior, attitude, and techniques using the highly successful Sandler training system. Our guest today is Caroline Robinson. Caroline, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Hey, I'm delighted to have you here. Caroline hails out of Cambridge, England, so she's traversing all the way across the pond, as they say. We appreciate you being on the show, Caroline. We're going to be talking today about one of the key steps in a typical sales call that oftentimes salespeople don't find out until they're doing a presentation, and that's the decision step. You get to that final presentation or demo where you're showing your clients, here's what we can do for you and here's how it's going to help you, and you're trying to close for the sale, and they say something like, you know, this looks really good. I need to take it to my board of directors, or I need to take it to my partner, or I need to check in with someone, which is key that we missed a step in the sales process. So Caroline's going to help us dig in deep to the components that would be involved in making sure we find that out before we're giving a presentation. So Caroline, take it away.
Lovely. Well, thank you. I mean, the reason I particularly wanted to talk about this part of the sales process is because for me, I think it's one of the most overlooked elements in selling overall.
I agree.
Yeah. And I think it can have such a significant impact, exactly as you were describing, when we don't include that or don't ask sufficient questions to uncover really and truly what's the decision-making process. I think there are a couple of reasons why we don't do it enough. I think sometimes people don't think it's important to ask the questions that are key within this decision-making process. And sometimes I think people are a bit afraid to ask as well,
right,
that maybe they think they're not allowed to ask questions that uncover what the decision-making process is of their prospects. And sometimes I think maybe people don't want to hear the answers that they might get back again.
I think that's a good point. It really is. It's a risky question to ask because I probably don't want to hear how complex the process is. I'd rather just try to close it now. But we do that at our own peril.
That's exactly right. I mean, I see it time and time again, and I've experienced that in my past as well before I truly knew what to do through Sandler, is that particularly the longer the sales cycle that you've got, the higher the cost of the sale for you as a business, the more significant the impact of not asking enough of these kind of questions early enough in the process. And as I say, I see it time and time again when it comes back and bites clients, when they've got all the way through towards what they think is the end of the sales process, and then suddenly other decision makers come out the woodwork, or timelines suddenly shift, things that were urgent have suddenly, that urgency has suddenly evaporated, or they find that, you know, there's additional hurdles that they now need to go through, or other competitors have come out the woodwork. So many different elements can come and trip us up if we don't do a really good job in this compartment.
Yeah, and one of the complications that happens when somebody new comes in is you really have to start over, because now I have somebody who knows nothing about what I've been doing, and I've got to figure out how do I get them up to speed so that they understand where I'm at with my primary prospect who I've been working on, and that can be very frustrating. And it's only then that you find out you may well have been doing unpaid consulting, because the person who is the real decision maker already knows who they want to use, and they're just using you to get a free proposal. You know, if that's going to be the reality, okay, but I'd like to know that going into it so that I can bail sooner rather than stick with an opportunity that is going to go nowhere.
That's it. And I think, as with all the rest of the sales process, information is power. So the more time we invest in finding this information out up front,
yes,
and continuing to check that all the way through the sales process, I think it only puts us in a much stronger position. And it comes back to that whole principle of, you know, on one level, it can feel reassuring if you've got lots of opportunities in your pipeline, but equally, if they're not real opportunities because you haven't taken the time to really qualify them, then actually it's a lot of false hope that you've got
in
your pipeline.
And if you're a sales manager or business owner listening to us, you've sat through those meetings where your people say, I got someone who's really interested, they really like us, they like what we're doing, and it just never materializes. Chances are they might be missing this key step in the Sandler process. So to put it into a context for our listeners, in this, we have a 7-step process that we have engineered in a sales call for Sandler. Starts with understanding bonding rapport, which is the psychology behind how people buy. Then it goes into setting the agenda, the upfront contract, where you establish equal business stature and get permission to ask questions. Then we go into finding pain. What is that underlying underlying compelling reason somebody would have to do business with you, and then we move into budget. What do they intend on investing, and is it a realistic amount? And then when we've gone, if we get a green light in each one of these, or at least a yellow light, proceed with caution, and we get to that decision step, that's where we start to probe a little bit deeper.
Yes, and I think there are so many different elements that could be included within uncovering the decision-making process. If I just cover that in a really high-level way, I mean, you know, the most basic one that I suppose everybody's very familiar with, we've got to understand who's involved in that decision-making process, and not just necessarily taking the first answer, but really probing beneath that, understanding what's the role of each of those different people within the process. You know, what's their perspective going to be on it? What's important to them? So people being one element, timelines being another. You know, when are they looking to make a decision? When are they looking to start the work? When are they looking to finish that work? And most crucially, understanding why those timelines are so important. I mean, I'm sure you, all of your listeners, will have experienced all those conversations you have with prospects who say everything's really urgent and you drop everything to do, right. You know, to respond to that. And then suddenly, once you've done all the work, that urgency suddenly completely evaporates.
And it's like, really, I made this my highest priority and you don't even answer my calls?
Exactly.
Very frustrating.
But we've got to recognize there is no such thing as a bad prospect, only a bad salesperson.
That's
so it's
right.
Something that we did wrong in the process. Didn't ask enough of these questions.
Spot on. We have to look in the mirror and say, where did I misunderstand? Where did I fail to ask a question? Or where did I get that dreaded disease that salespeople get, happy ears? I hear what I want to hear, not what they actually said.
So true. So we've got people, we've got timelines. Competition, I think, is an important area to uncover. Is this a competitive situation? Who else are they talking to? How far through the process are they with them? How are they going to decide on what's the right solution or the right partner to work with? What are their criteria for that? Are there any likely roadblocks to us working together? Any internal hurdles or processes they've got to go through on their side? So this compartment, I think, actually can be a really large compartment if you're dealing with a more complex sales environment. But I think you've got to judge for yourself, looking at your sales world and knowing it as you do, how large does this compartment need to be? Which are the most relevant of those criteria I've talked through that does it make sense for you to focus on? But generally, in my experience, people need to ask more questions here than they typically do and spend more time probing and uncovering it.
I think you bring up a great point. I think one of the reasons we don't want to know the answer, we don't ask these questions, is because we realize if it is a complex sale, it's going to be a lot more work. And we'd rather just kind of hope and pray that it ends up being an easy call as opposed to complex. And I think as I'm hearing you go through the details involved in just the decision step, it strikes me, Caroline, that people who are not using the Sandler system probably don't allow enough time for their sales calls. I know for me, before Sandler, my sales calls were fairly efficient, but not very effective. And I found I had to give up efficiency and take more time to either effectively disqualify the prospect or else to make sure this was a sale that was going to go somewhere. Give us your thoughts on that.
I totally agree with you. I think that to do the decision-making step properly, it does take some significant amount of time, and not just at the beginning of the sales conversation either, but as I mentioned before, I think you've got to continue to validate that throughout each of the different steps of your sales process, regardless of how long it is, to just double check, has anything changed, anything else come up that I need to be aware of? So I agree. For me, it's really about investing more time, but recognizing that you're doing yourself a service by investing more time up front by asking these questions, as opposed to skipping over them to try and get to the conclusion quicker.
Great. My guest today is Caroline Robinson. Caroline, give your contact information in case somebody'd like to reach out to you.
So my email address is crobinson@sandler.com, or if you look for Caroline Robinson on LinkedIn, you will find me there as well.
Awesome. And we're so delighted to have her as a part of this show. When we get back, we're going to talk in detail about the intricacies in the decision step. I'm Idaho's Sandler trainer, Jim Stevens. Visit our website at www.crossroads.sandler.com and download our free book, Why Salespeople Fail and What You Can Do About It. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement.
Hi, this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. With the baby boomer generation maturing, 8 million businesses will be sold or closed in the next 10 years. 75% of those companies have business owners who want to sell their business, but only 20% of them will be successful. If you're a business owner who's thinking about selling or transitioning your firm to your employees, and you're not sure if you'll be able to achieve your dream of a successful transition, call me, Jim Stevens, 208-429-9275. I will help you determine what actions will be required to position your business for a successful transition. Our initial no-cost analysis will help you see the four steps required to achieve success. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, we're ready to help. Sandler Training, 208-429-9275.
I have faith in the Sandler system. When you tell me things, sometimes it seems counter to what my instincts would tell me to do, but I go out there, I try it, and it works. Whatever you tell me, I'm going to keep going out there and putting it to you. This is something that's very, very different than any course that I've taken, and the results are going to be different as well. Firsthand, I would put my stamp on it. You will see results from this. I would do it.
Hi, this is Jim Stevens, and this segment of our program is Entrepreneur Radio. We've invited Toby Lyles from 24 Sound to join us on this segment of the program and share with us some of his success. The best way to learn for ourselves is when we can see from other people some of the chances they've taken and some of the strategies that have been successful in their lives, developing techniques and overcoming business challenges. So, Toby, really glad to have you on the show. And shameless plug for Toby, he came in and helped us clean up some of our sound issues for my radio show. So I got to meet Toby through some connection at the radio station. So welcome.
Well, thank you, Jim. And it has been a pleasure because I just want to point out to everybody that you are incredibly kind, generous, and, you know, I love talking with people who are quick to take action. And you and I talked on the phone once and you said, I've got a problem, I'm going to fix it. And I don't know how many entrepreneurs I'll talk to or business owners who are like, well, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
You just went for it. Yeah, I like it.
It's not worth languishing with a problem when there's the possibility of fixing it. And I have learned over my life, having someone who's an expert is a lot easier than me trying to become an expert. So tell us about 24 Sound. What got you into the business that you have created here?
Well, I got into this by accident because I used to do live audio. I was kind of an entrepreneur in that, but did freelance live audio in California. And I had kids in the middle of that. If anybody knows what that's like, try doing a gig for 3 days in a row when you've got babies at home, you'll quickly decide either you're going to choose work or you're going to choose family.
Right.
Yeah. So in the process, my wife and I were working on that, and I was listening to podcasts like crazy trying to solve my problem. Mm. And these are guys who are helping other people solve this problem. So once there's a critical moment where some guy's audio dropped out, and I said, I really want to hear what he was saying. So I wrote the guy who was hosting this podcast, said, hey, just turn a knob and you'll fix everything. So selfishly, I can hear, you know?
Right.
Hear your great content. And he was kind enough, he reached back out to me and opened my eyes up to what I didn't even understand was an industry of helping people sound better in the podcast world. And we started a business right off of that.
And you started out in the music world, right?
Yeah.
You were originally, what, a sound engineer for live musicians?
Yeah, live musicians or theater acts or all sorts of stuff.
So you would show up in a theater and you're the guy that helps make that sound good.
Correct, yeah.
Wow, that's a big transition.
It was a big transition, but it's not hard. It's kind of like the transition between some major or something, and then you come home and you're like, oh, and now my job is just to sit. I just need to stay here at the house. I hang out for a little bit. I get to take care of my family, make sure they're safe, and at the same time, I get to reach all around the world and help people out.
So your primary clients are not geographically bound to Boise. Most of your interactions are over the phone or internet, Skype?
Yeah. You know, we've got people in Rome right now. We've had the UK, all over the world. It's an internet business. So if you're somewhere else, you need a microphone and we'll help you get set up with a high quality system. And then you can start an entire platform of your own, kind of like you're doing. And then you get to help people with your voice and your microphone. And my job is on the audio side, I'm going to help you help people.
Make sure that I have the right equipment, make sure I know how to use it, make sure the equipment's doing what it's supposed to do.
Correct.
Yeah. One thing I've learned in doing this radio show is the quality that I produce in the studio studio is something that's going to carry through, or I should say the lack thereof, is going to carry through into production. You can do some post-production things to mask it, but you really can't cover up something, what is that they say, make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
That's better than some descriptions I've heard. So, yeah, that's right.
So give us an idea of what you're doing for clients. So somebody's listening to the radio show, they're thinking, yeah, I've always thought about doing a podcast. I don't know where to start. I'm guessing you might be that place to start.
Definitely. What we do for people is we help, if you're a business and you have an idea, if you have a message, if you want to reach people, most businesses have something they want to tell somebody, right?
Right, right.
So you want to reach your business or reach your audience or build an audience. My goal is to help you reach that audience. So we do it via audio, but the ultimate goal is to help you. So if you want to start one, you just talk to me and we'll have a conversation about what's your message, who are you going to reach, how are you going to do that, what elements do you need to put in place, what kind of music do you need to choose, just, you know, so it's a well-done podcast. And then we'll talk about how to get that out, how to communicate your message. Audio is very subjective, so understanding the right tone to really say what you want to say, because you can say something, but what are people going to hear? So
that's a good point. That's a great point. So when you're saying you help reach the audience, are you part of the, you work on the marketing side too, helping an entrepreneur figure out who is my audience?
Definitely. Yeah.
Expound on that a little bit for us.
Well, you know, we meet people at all sorts of places. Some know their audience. Some have their message down. They just need to record and go. And some people are still trying to understand how their message translates to audio. So if you don't know that yet, then we'll sit down and we'll talk about what our clients saying right now. What are some of the things you're constantly hearing? Or if you don't even know yet, you know, we'll talk about how do you find out what people are asking of you? How do you find out what message people need to hear from you? I'm not being real clear. I think everybody's in a different place.
Right.
So
right.
It really is a, where are you at? What are you trying to achieve? And let's just put the pieces together to achieve it.
In the world of podcasts, there's a little bit more control, I think, than radio, because you know that people are actually downloading, right? And
yeah.
Can you go to that source and find out, hey, why are you listening to us?
Yes. Yeah, that's a great way to do it. Now, depending on how technically, how that, sometimes it can be kind of hard.
Yeah.
But even just saying, hey, can you please go to my website? Can you, just asking for an action from the listener is a great way to get them on an email list or someplace where you can have communication with them.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're in a radio arena like this, do you work with other folks in radio or am I it?
You know, people go back and forth. So a lot of the podcasters have a background in radio. You know, they're going to be more prone to it. That doesn't mean you have to be,
yeah,
but they're just more likely to jump in. You asked something else and I missed.
No. I'm just wanting to know, in the context of a radio thrust where the audience is really invisible, how do you help somebody connect to that audience? And I think that might relate to somebody who's brand new, who also has an invisible audience. I don't know who I'm talking to.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. I think the core of it is asking for feedback. You can even look at your radio stations. They obviously have, you know, they know their brand, they know their audience, their target market. So that's a great way to start, but calls to action. So simply asking, can you please go to my website and get on this email list? Can you please tweet me? If anybody has a, you know, you could say, hey, what's your biggest entrepreneurial challenge? Tweet me at, you know, whatever your Twitter is.
Yeah.
Or some, you know, just whatever way it's really fast, easy to communicate, trying to engage people as much as possible so you hear back.
Yeah, I think that really is the name of the game if you're in a podcast, is you want to deliver something of quality that is useful to others. You want to know that in some ways it is useful. And I guess through those two mechanisms, you can either build a brand or monetize your offering. Give your contact information in case there's somebody out there that would like to reach out to you, Toby, and find out a little bit more.
Yeah, well, you can email anytime. My direct email is Toby, T-O-B-Y, at 24sound. And that's all spelled out. There's no numbers in that, at 24sound.com.
On Entrepreneur Radio, we take a look into stories from individuals, both successes and failures. We get to learn from their experience and see what changes occur in their business as a result of hard work and ingenuity. Toby's been great having you on the program. Stay tuned. We're going to be jumping back into the Sandler Training Hour. If you're interested in more information from me, go to our website at crossroads@sandler.com. That's crossroads@sandler.com. Let us know how we can help. We'll return to Behind the Business just after this. So far, I've been speaking with Caroline Robinson, a Sandler trainer in Cambridge, England, and we've been talking in some detail about the Sandler step we call the decision step. It's that step where we figure out who is the decision maker and all the assorted details necessary in there. So, Caroline, let's talk about what kind of opening do I have to transition from a conversation where I'm covering things like what is their pain, what is their budget. Now I'm moving into the decision step. Take us through what that process looks like.
Yeah, so I would say something along the lines of, you know, so I appreciate that we've identified what are the challenges that you're facing, the ones that you'd like to talk more about, how we potentially could address those. Talked about the budget, that if you found the right solution, you'd be willing and able to invest to address those issues. So can we just talk a little bit about how you would go about making a decision to invest that kind of money to address those kind of issues within your business?
So that gives the listener an opportunity to start to share the how behind their decision making. Do you find that prospects are hesitant to answer those questions?
In my experience, if they're asked in the right way, no. Yeah. I think a really big part of it is our belief and our confidence and conviction about our right to ask those questions. I think if you've got any hesitancy yourself about your right, if you like, to be able to probe around these kind of areas, that comes across in your tonality, the words that you use, you sound a bit hesitant, and then you're more likely to get somebody digging in their heels and not sharing that information with you. But if we look at where we are in the process, we've established really good bonding and rapport with them. They trust us by this point. Mm-hmm. They've opened up, they've shared their real pains with us. Mm-hmm. They've been willing to have an open conversation with us about budget. So to me, it's just a natural flow for us to then go on and just talk and uncover all these different elements of the decision-making process.
Yeah, Caroline makes a great point here. You've got to have that mindset that says, I serve my clients best by understanding everything there is to know about whether we will be a good fit working together or not. And the decision step is part of that. And I think you have to mingle a little bit of curiosity along with that equal business stature and a slight overtone of authority when you're asking those questions, because that's what's going to help them really feel comfortable, as you said, opening up. So you got to have your mind in the game to be able to do this well.
Yeah. And I think as a lot of the Sandler techniques and tools that we talk about, you've just got to have a little bit of guts, a few seconds at a time. Just have the guts to say it, and then to probe around that. And it can get you a very, very long way and give you some really useful information that you can then figure out, do I disqualify this opportunity or actually is this one I'm prepared to go further? Right. Forward and invest more of my time, effort, and energy.
So I ask them the how question. What else do I want to know?
So that for me really is just the opener. It's then really probing in a lot more detail around the some of those key areas that I mentioned before. So timelines being a really important element. So questions along the lines of, you know, so what are your timelines for making a decision? When are you looking to start the work? When are you looking to have the work completed by? And can you tell me a little bit more about why the timelines are as you've just described them?
One of the things I find helpful on that timeline discussion is I like using a whiteboard for selling. So I have something that I'm able to draw on. Even if you don't, a sheet of paper, I literally draw a timeline out on the board and I put a mark in the early third and I say something along the line of, let's pretend you're right here in your decision process. What have you done so far to help you understand whether this is whether you even want to do this? So that way I get that historic context and then help ask them the question. So let's pretend you had a magic wand. Ideally, when would we implement this? Get that end date and then let them help you build the benchmarks that will define the stages you need to go through. Your thoughts?
I couldn't agree more. I think that is such a nice technique to really demonstrate trusted advisor status. I think of that one as almost us coming round the same side of the table as the prospect.
Right.
So we're
right.
Working together. Let's figure this out together. The other element that I think can work really nicely is once you've drawn the timeline out is then map people to it. So at each
Love
stage
that.
Of the process, who are the people who are going to be important on their side to involve? But also, what about your side? Are there other people that you would need to involve from different departments, say within the organization, who would need to be talking to, say, different departments within their organization, depending on the complexity of the sales process?
And to Caroline's point, this does establish you as a trusted advisor because, frankly, many times the person you're talking to hasn't really thought it through. Have you had that experience, Caroline, that their eyes are kind of wide open and they're like, wow, I didn't realize we have to do all that?
Definitely. And I think particularly the larger the organization, and particularly if this is something they've not done before, they themselves may have very little idea of really what are the steps that they need to go through in the decision-making process.
And the timeline then can become your upfront contract, if you will, for, so what do we do next? As we map out who should we talk to and what department is involved, this gives us a roadmap, if you will.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. It informs, it enables you to uncover so many different elements around the decision-making process, but in a really nice collaborative way. You know, you mentioned before, do people ever, you know, resist and not share that information with you? I think taking that timeline approach, drawing it out, is a great way to get buy-in from them in terms of sharing information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we've got the timeline roughly outlined. We're starting to put together who's involved. Explain it for the listeners, the concept in Sandler we call the cast of characters.
Yeah, so cast of characters is really about mapping out who are the people who are involved in the decision-making process. And what's their impact really on the decision-making process? So you obviously have decision maker, that's an easy one, but you're going to have other influences in there. You may have people who are end users who themselves might not make the decision, but actually they might be really influential in determining who, you know, what's the right solution. You can also look at it in terms of their relationship or their perspective on you and your company. Do they see you as a friend? Are they actively a supporter for you? Do they advocate you internally, or are they pretty neutral about you? You know, haven't come across you before, don't really have an established relationship, or are there even some people within there who count in the enemy category? I think that is few and far between, but if they're there, I think we need to know that really early on and figure out, is that something we can manage and address? And if so, what would our strategy be?
Yeah, figuring out who is all involved. There's going to be a star. There's probably a co-star. There's supporting cast members. There are bit players. And if you think about it as a Broadway play, you want to know who all the players are so that you're able to manage and direct your efforts. And one of the things I find in that whole cast of characters is it's going to vary whether you're selling business to business or business to consumer. I think the mistake, Caroline, that a lot of salespeople make business to consumer is that, oh, I must be talking to the decision maker because this is the person who obviously makes the decision, not realizing that there are supporting cast members that can potentially sabotage your agenda.
Absolutely. And I think most people are risk averse. I think particularly within larger organizations, so they want the reassurance, if you like, of getting input from other people, their opinions and their perspectives. So even if they say to you, I am the only decision maker, I think the rule of thumb has to be never, ever believe that unless you've asked several more questions or several times over.
Never, ever believe that. I love that. I remember I own a remodeling company, and I remember a situation where I had in the budget step uncovered that the son-in-law or brother-in-law was the financial planner, and they were planning on taking the money out of their retirement fund to fund the remodeling project. And it was not in his best interest to lose the management of $300,000 worth of their money. And had I not asked those questions before Sandler, I'd have gone in blind and never been able to help coach the client through the process of, so what do you think your brother-in-law is going to say when you say to him, you want to pull this money out? And they gave me their answer. And I say, well, what about trying this? This might help. And it gives you the opportunity to coach your buyer in how to help you become their salesperson.
I think that's a lovely way of putting it. So part of this decision-making process is to uncover the information, but it's then for us to figure out, what do I do as a result of that? So is it that I can coach them through it, or is it that I can actually negotiate a bit on the sales process? So we don't always have to follow their decision-making process exactly the way they lay it out. You know, if they're asking for something unreasonable, we should be comfortable pushing back on that in a nurturing way so that actually, you know, we're recognizing we've got equal rights within the sales process. And sometimes buyers ask for things that actually aren't in their best interest and nor in ours.
Right. Sometimes the following of the set plan or delaying the purchase can really play a against them.
Yeah, absolutely.
My guest today is Caroline Robinson. Caroline, give your contact information in case somebody'd like to reach out to you.
My email address is crobinson@sandler.com, or if you search for Caroline Robinson on LinkedIn, you will find me there.
And I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. If you like this show and you want to subscribe to our content, visit us at crossroads.sandler.com/podcast or reach out at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement.
So, Doug, you and your team have been involved in the Sandler program for, maybe a year or so. First, you invited me to come out and spend 2 days with the team on site. So talk a little bit about what happened there.
We called you Crossroads because we were having difficulty communicating as a team. Our management leadership meetings were contentious. People that were involved had their own agenda and the inability to hear others, and we needed some avenue to clear the path for everybody to be heard and for everybody to be able to speak. And that was what was most telling after the initial meetings with you and Joan and your staff, that allowed us to at least open that door and then understand why people communicated the way they did.
Right.
That was the eye-opening experience we received early on in training with Crossroads.
And in that two-day meeting, we helped you all understand each other better by going through your assessments. I felt like watching your team go through that, you all were drawn closer together. Give me your thoughts on the sharing of the assessments and taking the assessments, what that's done for the team.
It can be initially a very uncomfortable experience, and I think what you saw as far as drawing us closer is that when you experience something very uncomfortable in a crowd, and granted it's people that you know, you're able to, you may initially, and what we saw was people initially disagreed with what was being said about them, but with your help, they were able to understand that it was, in fact, the reality. Perhaps when they saw other people going through the same thing, appreciated it.
Yeah.
Were able to swallow their own weaknesses when they saw others doing the same.
Caroline, so far we've talked about the conceptual, but I'd like us to get into the technical. So I don't suppose you'd be willing to take us through the steps basically in the decision aspect of a sales call. So let's do a role play where you're selling accounting software to me, and I'm a nonprofit organization. I've got a board of directors that I have to get approval for spending on. You've uncovered that. We currently use a software that doesn't give good reporting. Was one of the pains that you uncovered. And because I don't get the right reports, my staff is spending too much time on putting together the reports required by the executive director and the board of directors.
Okay.
And so Caroline's going to pick it up at the review. So we like to review every time you transition from one step to the next, we like to review that step. So she's going to review pain and budget step.
Okay. So if I could just take a little bit of a step back.
Sure.
And just play back to what I've understood to make sure I've heard it all right and there's nothing that we've missed out so far. So what I'm hearing is that, you know, you're already using some accounting software, but it's maybe not doing exactly what you need it to do at the moment. So you've got some frustrations about it's not producing the kind of reports that you need, so it's sucking up an awful lot of your staff's time to produce the output that you need.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. And so we talked about the pains that you've identified. You said to me that for you to be able to get approval, for you to be able to get funding to be able to change the software that you've got, you have to get approval from your board of directors.
Yeah, that is correct.
Can we just talk a little bit more about that so I can just understand what's the kind of typical process that you go through internally to be able to decide whether or not actually you would make a shift, you'd be prepared to invest in alternative software?
Sure. Well, the way our organization is structured is I'm basically doing the legwork. I'm going to present my findings to our executive director, and then it's his job to make a decision about what direction he wants to head, and then he'll present that to the board.
Okay. And so are you working to a particular timeline when you've got to feedback to your executive director?
Well, part of the reason I want to make this change now is because it's at a good year where our fiscal year starts in 2 months. And so if we're going to make the change, I'd rather do it now and transition now instead of mid-year where I'm going going to have to run two sets of software for any length of time.
And just unpicking that a little bit more then, so is this something that you're at the front line, if you like, you're the one feeling the frustration. Is that frustration shared by your executive director?
Not to the degree that I have, I'm sure. It's on his radar screen, but I don't think he's that, I don't know what the word is, I guess maybe motivated, or at least not as motivated as I am.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, for me, I've got so many projects that are unfinished. If I could free up my staff by having an automated reporting process, I can see a potential to save, in an average month, probably 20 to 30 hours. And if I could have that time back, there's other projects that need to get done that we're not doing, and it's in his best interest that we make those a higher priority.
But what I'm hearing from you is that he's not seeing the value of that at this stage.
Yes, probably not as clearly as I do.
Okay. So typically, I mean, that's not an unusual situation that you've identified. So typically what would happen at this stage is the three of us would get together. So you, me, and sorry, what's the first name of your executive director?
His name is Tom Jones.
Okay, Tom. So typically what would happen is the three of us would get together to talk this through so that, you know, I can answer any particular questions that he's got that maybe, you know, you wouldn't feel so comfortable talking through yourself, so that we can collectively really figure out, look, is there something here? Is he actually prepared to buy into this idea as well? Or actually, does he just not see it as a priority?
Yeah, I'm not sure he would agree to that. I mean, he's very busy and he's given me the task of figuring out what direction I want to go. So I think that's probably premature. What needs to happen next is you give me a quote and then I'll be able to take that to him and decide based on the other parties we've been talking to, which is the best solution.
So appreciate that you feel it's too early in the process for the three of us to sit down. But realistically, for me to be able to pull together that quote the way you're asking for, you're looking for, is I'd need to have a brief 10-minute conversation with him just to understand things from his perspective. So it really be a case of us figuring out how could we make that happen.
Well, personally, I can see how that would be helpful, not only for you, but also for me. But frankly, that's not the job I've been given. And the other competitors that I'm looking at, none of them are requiring this. What they've done is they've given me a demo to show me what their product does. They've given me a quote, and then I'm equipped to go back to Tom and present to him, here's what I think we should do and why. So I think that's the direction I'd like to head.
Okay. I mean, that makes perfect sense. I understand that. You mentioned there that you've been speaking to some other companies as well. Can you just tell me a little bit more about who it is that you've been speaking to and what sort of stage of the process you're at with them?
Sure. We've been looking at Brand X, which is, they've got some actually compelling features that I really like. We've also been talking to ABC Corp, and I'm not impressed, but I'm going to use them as one of the potentials. So that's, and you're the third party that I've been looking at.
Oh, okay. In terms of Brand X, I mean, you're right, they are a good company. You mentioned that they've got some compelling features. What in particular do you like about what they've shown you so far?
Well, I really like that they have strict controls over the general ledger, that there's no way for anybody to backtrack and create any kind of a covered paper trail, which gives the board of directors, they have fiscal responsibility over this nonprofit, and it will give them the security of knowing that they are protected.
So I guess I'm curious then, I mean, there's obviously some things that you really like about Brand X. Is there any particular reason why you haven't gone to Tom already and said, this is the company I want to work with?
That's a good question. I guess I feel like I should have three to pick from.
Because?
Well, I don't know. It just makes sense. Aren't you supposed to get three bids?
A lot of people do. I guess it's ensuring that you're through the process, you're able to find out who's the right company for you to work with.
And I'm not sure what I might be missing. So I'd like to see. Mm-hmm. I've heard good things about your product. I've been online. I've read some of the reviews. I like what I've read there. And so I felt like you have that security that I'm looking for. And I wanted to see if you have any other benefits that might help me.
Okay. So you mentioned security then. Does that mean you haven't found that from Brand X, or
no,
that's sort of a minimum?
They've got that secure paper portrayal that I want, and I want to see if you have that, and then also if you have any additional things that might be useful for us.
I see. What sort of additional things might you be looking to consider?
Well, one of the areas that we're also having problems I mentioned earlier is that customized reporting.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to do some customized reporting. I'm going to have to hire them to develop the report, which is going to be expensive. I'd like to see if you already have some of the reports that I'm looking for pre-developed, which would save us time and money.
Okay. So my suggestion would be at this stage, why don't we arrange a demo? Why don't we get a date and the time in the diary for us to be able to do that? And then I can walk you through what are the different elements of our products and services. I can maybe talk about some of the similarities and some of the differences from those other companies that you've talked about. Does that make sense from your perspective?
Yeah, no, that's what I'd like to do next.
Okay. And from your perspective, who would we need to have involved in that demo? Who are going to be the kind of key players that need to have not necessarily an in-depth understanding of how the tool works, but at least have an appreciation of what it is and the value it could bring to the organization? Sounds like Tom, for example, would be a key person to have involved.
Yeah, I'm not sure he would be willing to be involved. We could certainly invite him. I think his response is going to be, you decide what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I think a couple of my staff members, would be important to have them involved, because if they aren't familiar with it, they don't want to change anyway, right? They're comfortable with what we have now, so I'd like to have them see it so it would give them a look at what we're considering.
Okay. And what's the first name of those staff members? What's their role?
I've got Sandra,
mm-hmm.
who she's our accounts receivable, and then I've got Mary, who's our accounts payable.
Okay. So what my suggestion would be, I mean, typically what we do is we structure the demo in two components. So the first bit tends to be where we involve those people who are similar to Tom, taking a bit more of a strategic role,
mm-hmm.
where we do just a 10, 15 minute overview to understand a little bit more about what they're looking for. And then they tend to leave the demo at that point. And then we tend to get into a more depth, so that you yourself can get more of an idea of what the tool can do itself, as well as, getting into some of the detail that Sandra and Mary might need to see for them to figure out, actually, is this a tool we'd be comfortable with?
I like that. So that's a great, great job. I like how at the very end, out of role play, you made it easy for Tom to sit in just on a little bit so that you can ask some specific questions. And of course, if you're in a very complex sale, you might have to drill down to who are the board members and what's their voice in it, because each party has a stake in the outcome, and it's up to us as salespeople to figure out what that is. Great job, Caroline. Awesome.
One other thing I would add to that is, once you've found out the role of those different board of directors, there can be real value in picking up the phone and just having really short conversations with the key ones who are involved in the process.
Right, right. That's so true. My guest today is Caroline Robinson. Caroline, give your contact information.
My email address is crobinson@sandler.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn, Caroline Robinson.
And this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. If you'd like to receive my weekly tip on how to jumpstart your professional development, sign up at crossroads.sandler.com. This is Sandler Training, where you find power in reinforcement.
As a sales manager, you do what it takes to motivate your team, like having regular sales meetings and providing coaching and training when needed. But as a sales manager, how do you improve your performance? Sandler Sales Training has 6 free suggestions for you to become a more effective manager. Just visit crossroads.sandler.com for your free download. Attitude, behavior, and becoming a resource are just a few of the areas where you may improve your skills as a manager, a mentor, and a motivator. Sandler Sales Training invites you to grab these 6 free tips today at crossroads.sandler.com. You can use these suggestions to examine your attitudes and actions, which can help you interact better with your sales team and improve their performance. Become a better leader today. Again, that's crossroads.sandler.com. Sandler Sales Training, finding power in reinforcement. Let them show you how. Visit crossroads.sandler.com today.
Now, your management team was involved in our program called Strategic Management. In that program, they meet 2 hours twice a month, and we really learn the fundamentals of management. What is some of the feedback you got from your employees?
Well, I think that being in the management meetings helped us see the weakness in several of our team members. And I think as we went month to month, it helped me identify maybe the people that did not have the management ability to even lead, you know, a department. And so a couple of those are actually no longer with our company. So it helped me make a quick decision to, you know, release them from employment and to get someone that does fit our company culture and our way of doing things here at First General Services. It's an investment, you know. It's an investment of time. The way I saw it was that I had four of my highest paid management team sitting for 2 hours instead of, right, of working. At first, I was a little taken back by, you know, how long that was of a period to meet. But I think because it just goes by so fast. It's just it's so much interaction that you have to do, and Jim has a great way of keeping our attention and engaging us with question and answers and role plays, and yeah, that helped the time just fly by. Yeah. But I think months, you know, into the program, we started to see the things actually being applied. Some of the chapters that we were going on over would actually be brought up in a production meeting, and yeah, and some of those skills, you could actually see them come to fruition and, nice, and being applied to the way that our management team worked together.
Welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm with Sandler trainer Caroline Robinson. Now, Caroline, Sandler is trial and error, ongoing reinforcement and commitment that's required to be successful here. One of the things I love about the Sandler process is every one of us who is a Sandler trainer, coach, and consultant, we sell for a living. We don't just tell people what to do. We actually have to do it ourselves. And if we don't follow our own process, we don't succeed. So share with our listeners, what are some of the frustrations, concerns, challenges that you've had in your life learning how to own the Sandler system and shift from the old selling process to the new selling process?
Goodness, how much time have I got?
Right.
I think the biggest thing for me is that going through this whole Sandler process has really been, I suppose, confronting myself in a mirror and really learning what's going on in my head, if you like, in that what are the attitudes, what we call head trash, what are those different elements, yeah, that are getting in the way? And, you know, as you very well know, that changes all the time. So, you know, you grow the business to a certain level, you deal with the head trash you've got at that point, and then you take the business to the next level and suddenly you encounter another level of head trash. You've got to get through that to then be able to take the business up to another level.
Boy, that is so true. And how long have you been doing this?
5.5 years now.
Yeah, so I'm approaching my 20th year and I'm still doing the exact thing you're describing. I mean, it's the beginning of the year, we're doing our goal setting. I'm looking at where I want to go, and the biggest roadblock is between my ears. It's my belief structure, and I got to get out of my own way. I got to get out of my comfort zone, and I've got to push myself. And, you know, you'd kind of think that at some point you could be on autopilot, but it just doesn't work that way, does it?
No, it certainly doesn't. But the beauty of Sandler is you also have all the tools and support that you need to be able to address that and keep pushing through those different levels of head trash.
Yeah, and I think that mental game is really one of the key elements. We talk about the success triangle, attitude, behavior, technique. Getting your head right, if your brain doesn't work in alignment, no technique will ever work. You won't even do the behaviors if you don't believe in it. So really, it's that introspection, and it takes a lot of courage to be able to look at yourself in a mirror. I've had many clients say to me things like, you know, I didn't realize this was going to be therapy.
So true. Yes, we hear it a lot.
You really have. You do learn a lot. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I have clients sharing that with me all the time. But I think that's the key to success, isn't it? It's being prepared to look in the mirror, face what the head trash is, and to be able to implement the change, the behaviors that are needed to be able to break through that and get yourself, your business, whatever that is, to the next level.
And I think in Sandler, the catalyst we provide is our clients are coming every single week. They're getting a new piece of information that we're asking them to go out and practice, I would say 50-60% of it is out of their natural selling style. We call it 180 degrees different from the way they've sold in the past. So in order to do what we're suggesting, you've got to have the courage and conviction and faith that it works.
Definitely. I mean, I see, although we're known for sales training, for me, we're really about behavioral transformation, which is how can we change our attitude, our mindset, and change our daily, weekly, monthly behaviors to be able to put ourselves in the right position to implement the techniques effectively.
Do you have an example of some area in your personal development that you're working on and you're up against that wall and you're having to talk yourself into doing something different or new?
So for me, it's about consistency of behavior. And I know with my DISC profile that that's something that I'm continuously going to have to push myself beyond my comfort zone
right.
to do the consistent level of behavior that I need to get the business to the level that I want to.
Yeah, for me, the challenge that I'm facing is the majority of my clients are in, I would say, the under $20, $25 million. And I like to tap into that larger market. And so getting my head around belonging in the larger market is really the first step. I've got to see myself being there. And then I've got to be willing to take the action to knock on the doors and work on opening that type of business approach, which I've successfully done in smaller businesses, but transitioning, I mean, it's a big change.
It is, but isn't it fascinating how you look back after, I don't know, 6-9 months of having made that change, and you're like, why was I so worried about it? Actually, it's the same principles apply. I just needed to get out there and do it.
That's so true. Our biggest problem is ourselves. We're fighting against it, and it's really probably not nearly as difficult as our mind makes it.
Definitely.
That's awesome. So I think comfort zone is one of the things that's hard to get out of. Any advice you'd give to our listeners if they find themselves stuck? I'm stuck in a comfort zone. There's something I need to do behaviorally. I need to be making more prospecting calls. If you're a manager, I need to be holding my people more accountable and I'm just letting them do what they want and living with their excuses. How do I break out of those traps?
Oh gosh, there's so many different elements that can help us with that. I think you mentioned goal setting earlier. I think people having a very clear understanding of what their goals are and why those goals are meaningful to them. I mean, certainly that was a really big breakthrough for me, was really figuring out what's my reason why? Why am I really doing this? And
nice.
Connecting that to the behavior suddenly became much more motivating. I could understand the kind of bigger picture of why it made sense for me to do those behaviors beyond just purely generating more revenue.
Yes, we have a great goal setting tools in our Sandler Online portfolio that allows you to think your way through the personal motivations that would cause you to take the action and pay the price, frankly, to get out of your comfort zone and do something that right now may feel heroic, but like Caroline says, you look back and it's like, wow, was it really even that big a deal after all?
Yeah, and I think accountability is another big aspect of it, something we're really hot on within Sandler, is who's holding you accountable? Because I think it's tough to hold yourself accountable when you're trying to break through a comfort zone. So do you either have, you know, an accountability partner, if you like, that's prepared to give you those tough messages, or if you're that sales manager, are you really holding your people accountable? Or as you say, are you accepting their excuses? In which case, you're not doing them any favors, and you're certainly not doing yourself any favors either.
That's true. And one other element that I've found useful is journaling. So share with our listeners a little bit about how that can help you take out your head trash.
Yeah, I'm a really big fan of journaling. So lots of different structures out there for how you journal, but basically it's a way of getting your head in order. It's a way of really understanding what are those limiting beliefs you've got within your head and writing what are called affirmations to directly negate that head trash, have the opposite belief, if you like, that puts your mind where you want it to be. So for example, the journaling format that I follow, I write down my yearly goals, my monthly goals, and my weekly goals, 10 things I'm grateful for, 10 things that I want to attract, both in the short term, medium and long term, the must do things that day, my commits. And then I write, it's probably about 8 to 10 affirmations, which are really crystallizing the mindset, the beliefs that I want to have to enable me to break through my comfort zone and get my business to the next level.
So help me out here. What would be a good affirmation for me trying to break into a larger market sector?
So it could be, so there's two components to it. One of it is action oriented. So there's an action to it. And the other is the, if you like, the belief that you've got to have. So let me give you an example of one of mine and then we'll turn it into one for you.
All right.
So one of mine, for example, is every day I outbehave the competition, which means I'm the most sought out and sought after sales consultant in my area.
Wow. Good
so
one.
There's action to it. Every day I outbehave the competition, which means that I own that. Nobody else can do it. I'm the only person who can outbehave it, outbehave the competition. And then the second element is, so I am the most sought out and sought after sales consultant in my area. So that's my aspiration, if you like, the thing that I'm working towards.
Great suggestions. So one affirmation needs to be a call to action.
That's right.
And the other one needs to be a mindset.
That's beautifully put, yes.
Love that. So help me out here. I've got an expert on the line. I want help. What's my action oriented affirmation?
Well, you tell me, what's the action that you could do, that you need to take?
Nice Sandler move, reversing. Look at her. She's so good. I think the action is picking up the phone or reaching out physically to the ideal clients that I've identified.
Okay. And then it's the second bit becomes that mindset then. So it's that belief that actually you've got every right to be calling on that group of businesses, those decision makers within the organization. So I don't know, it could be something along the lines of, you know, it could be similar to mine, to be fair, that you are the most sought out sales training organization for large organizations within your area.
Love that. And how about my action?
So the action element could be that every day so let's start with the first one. So every day I do the behaviors necessary to get myself in front of decision makers of large organizations.
Good. Well, I'm going to commit to doing that.
Ah, nice.
I'm going to add that to my journaling. Thank you so much for your help. My guest today has been Caroline Robinson. Caroline, give your contact information in case somebody like to connect with you through LinkedIn or otherwise.
My email address is crobinson@sandler.com. And if you search for Caroline Robinson on LinkedIn, you will find me there.
Thank you so much, listeners, for inviting us into your world. I'm Jim Stevens, and my calling is to challenge people to resist the status quo. Are you frustrated because you're living with just good enough? Are you forced to accept chaos and volatility in daily business and customer relationships? Are you anxious about your career of trial and error, learning the hard way? If you're ready to stand up to the insanity of programmed living, call me at 208-429-9275. Have a great weekend, and remember, if you measure it, you will manage it.